Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 61. The heading of this psalm says, "For the director of music with stringed instruments of David." Simple header this time. The song is a tune that should be played with a lyre or a harp. I'm going to call this psalm, "Lead Me to the Rock." It's a short psalm, 8 verses. This will be a fast audio this time. We start in Psalms 61, verses 1 through 3. "Hear my cry, O God," David prays to God. "Give heed to my prayer. From the end of the earth I call to you when my heart is faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you have been a refuge for me, a tower of strength against the enemy." Now David is praying in verse 2 from the end of the earth. Why did David say he was calling from the ends of the earth? It's a little bit strange if you think about it. Here's some options. Option number 1 from the NIV Study Bible. David is speaking emotionally, not literally. There is no end of the earth literally, because the earth is round. But what he's saying is, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. It would be an idiom, kind of like the way we say, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. There's no such thing literally as the middle of nowhere, but you get the idea. So that could be it. The other option is to translate haaretz there, earth, as land, as Adam Clark suggests. He says this, the word here, quote, "should be here translated land, not earth, and so it should be in numerous places besides." Well, that's true. I've pointed that out many times as I've gone through the Old Testament. You have to go by context. So if you say it means land, it would mean this, "from the end of the land I call to you." In other words, wherever I am in Israel, I'll call to you. Doesn't really matter. It's a minor point. I think it's probably earth. That's the way the NASB has it. That's the way the Holman Christian Study Bible has it, and if I looked at a bunch of other translations, I'd probably come up with the same thing, although I haven't done so. Now, in verse 2, David says to God, "Lead me to the rock that is higher than I." That's a famous phrase. You might have heard that spoken in sermons. Now, we need to get a picture of what David's thinking when he says this. Strongholds back then were high in the rocky hills. If one held that position, one was invincible. Attackers could retreat after they attacked on a flat plain or on flat terrain. They could retreat back up the mountain, high up in the hills. And once you got there, you could go to a cave or maybe stand on a steep height that your enemy could not scale. And you're just as safe as you can be. And so that's what David's thinking when he says, "Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. I need protection." In fact, he says in verse 3, "For you have been a refuge for me," which is protection, "a tower of strength against the enemy." If you think about one of those rocky crags, it's like a tower. And David hiding behind that tower, he's strong. He can't be gotten at by his enemies. And David always is talking about his enemies, as I've pointed out as we've gone through the Psalms. That's one of his favorite themes. As I've said before, he has more enemies than Donald Trump. He didn't have the state police like the FBI after him, but he had just about everybody else after David during his long career. Now, this metaphor of a rock has been used by David in other psalms previously. Psalms 18:2. This is a Davidic psalm. "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold." So there the metaphor is even more pronounced. Psalm 40, verse 2, another Davidic psalm. "He," that's God, "brought me out of the pit of destruction, out of the miry clay, and he set my feet upon a rock, making my footsteps firm." So we go down to verse 4 in Psalm 61. David says to God, still praying, "Let me dwell in your tent forever. Let me take refuge in the shelter of your wings." Why did David say that God was living in a tent? Well, Gill says it's probably the tabernacle. Could be heaven, could be a metaphor that refers to where God just lives in general, and David wants to live with God. Dwelling with God in the presence of God is one of the big themes of the Old Testament. That's what Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden. That's what Moses and the elders did on Mount Sinai when they had that meal with God. Remember what Jesus said to his disciples? "We're going to eat at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're going to live with God." How about the New Jerusalem in the book of Revelation where all the nations come streaming through the gates where God lives? So David wants that. Now David says at the end of verse 4, "Let me take refuge in the shelter of your wings." David has said exactly the same thing in Psalms 57 verse 1 when he says, "Be gracious to me, God, be gracious to me, for I take refuge in you. I will seek refuge in the shadow of your wings until danger passes. Well, how does the metaphor work? Well, a bird covers her young while they are in the nest, as the NIV Study Bible says, so that could be the reference, especially when a storm comes. Or another option is from Adam Clark, a hen hides her head under her own wings when a storm comes. So the idea is the hen is protecting herself from the storm, at least she thinks she is. Or option number three, a hen hides her chicks under her wings when it gets hot to cool the little chickens off. But anyway, he's using an agricultural metaphor here, a metaphor from the natural world, and he's saying, God, protect me. And David did need protections. Selah, of course, is that term that nobody knows what it means. It probably means an interlude. Pause here while we sing this song. We go now to Psalm 61, 5 through 8, and we will be finished with this psalm. David continues praying to God. For you have heard my vows, O God. You have given me the inheritance of those who fear your name. You will prolong the king's life. His years will be as many generations. He will abide before God forever. Appoint loving kindness and truth that they may preserve him. So I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may pay my vows day by day. Now, vows translated in verse 5 and also in verse 8 is translated in the Septuagint to the Greek as prayers, for you have heard my prayers, O God. A vow is very similar to a prayer. You offer a peace offering sacrifice and say, God, if you will do X, I will give you a peace offering. Actually, the vow was done before the peace offering. The offeror would say to God, if you will do X, I will give you a peace offering. And then when God does X, then the offeror offers the peace offering. And David apparently had a lot of vow. He had made a lot of vows to God because he said, I will pay my vows day by day. Lots of vows. Help me, O God. If you will deliver me from enemy A, I'll give you a peace offering. If you deliver me from enemy B, I'll give you a peace offering. I'll have to schedule this out once a day because I have so many enemies. At the end of verse 5, David says, you have given me the inheritance of those who fear your name, the inheritance of the saints. What is that inheritance? A couple of options here. Could be the land of Israel. John Gill suggests this. Here's a psalm that mentions the inheritance of the land of Israel as an inheritance. The author of the psalm is unknown. The psalm says this, saying, to you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion of your inheritance. So it could be the physical land of Israel. And of course, David had that land as his inheritance, so that would make sense. David could have been saying, you have given me the inheritance of those who fear your name. In other words, heaven, the world to come, assuming the Old Testament Jews had a idea of the world to come, and I think they did. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest that inheritance could refer to the spiritual blessings that those who lived in Israel had, the ability to commune with God, for example. And I should mention the temporal blessings that go along with that, good crops, good rain, and so forth. But I would suggest it could be all three of those things, the land, the spiritual blessings that come upon the land, including the temporal blessings, I guess that's three things, and the world to come, that's four things that are part of the inheritance of the believer. Basically, the inheritance of the believer is so good we can hardly even count the blessings involved therein. Verse 6, David says, you, God, will prolong the king's life. Now, who is that king? Is probably referring to himself. My life will be prolonged. He did live to an old man. Remember when he was old, they put that teenage girl into bed with him, which seems a little bit kinky to me, but anyway, kept him alive, kept him happy, kept him warm. But that's what they did back then. It wasn't kinky that to them. You will prolong the king's life. And he did. He died at an old age. Adam Clark says that this is referring to the coming of the Messiah who will live forever. You will prolong the king's life, David's life, by bringing a Messiah in the line of David who will live forever. That is very theological. I don't think that's what David meant. Now, David could have meant that God will prolong the Davidic line. His life is prolonged through his descendants, starting with David and ending with the Messiah. Now, that could be. But whatever it is, David is giving God credit, saying that the king's years will be as many generations. If he's just referring to himself alone, he's saying, I'm going to live to 40, 80, 120 years. Or he's referring to his descendants. Verse 7, he, the king, will abide before God forever. He will live with God forever, dwelling in the presence of God. And then in verse 7 at the end, he says, appoint loving kindness. David says this, God, please appoint loving kindness and truth that they may preserve the king. Now, how do you appoint kindness and truth to preserve the king? Well, we'll see that kindness and truth are personified here. Appoint two gentlemen named Kindness and Truth and let them stand guard over me. Once again, God is shown to be kind as well as true. There's lots of mercy and loving kindness in the Old Testament. If you do a search on that word in any English translation, you will find it all over the place, because God is not merely a God of wrath in the Old Testament. He's a God of love and kindness. So kindness and truth are going to preserve the king. David, verse 8, so I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may pay my vows day by day. And on that happy note, this whole psalm was pretty happy, actually. David always ends his psalms on a happy note. And on that happy note, we are finished with Psalms 61, and we are now prepared to go to Psalm 62 in our next audio, which I will entitle, My Soul Waits for God Alone. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.